So we saw Solomon and Rehoboam and then Jeroboam. We saw that Jeroboam did not want what? People to go from Israel to Judah, to Jerusalem. He did not want them to go there to worship. Okay? So he did what? Made golden calves in Bethel and in Dan, and he told people, you all can worship here itself. In other words, Jeroboam was an evil king. He was a wicked king who forsook God's truth in favor of his own position. Okay? Now we are going to quickly look at Jeroboam's family line, Jeroboam's dynasty. Who came after Jeroboam? So, you'll have to just note down these names. 1 Kings chapter 15 verse 25. Please read. 1 Kings chapter 15 verse 25. Okay, so here we have the son of Jeroboam. What's his name? Nadab. Okay. Then, verse 27. 1 Kings chapter 15 verse 27. Okay. So after Nadab, who is the next king? Baasha. Is Baasha Nadab's son? No. Where is Nadab at this time? Yeah, they are at a town called Gibbethon. And they are doing what? They are besieging this town. It's a town of the Philistines. So while Nadab and the Israelite army is besieging this Philistine town, at that time, what happens? What happens then? Baasha comes. What does Baasha do? He kills Nadab and then he tries to become king. Okay? So, now this is slightly out of our topic. But notice, which is this town that they are besieging? Which country, which area is this? Philistine country. Okay? What do you know about the Philistines? They were enemies of Israel. During which time do you hear a lot about the Philistines? During the time of David, Samson. Is that after Nadab and Jeroboam or is it before Nadab and Jeroboam? It is before. 3-4 generations before. During the time of Samson, during the time of the judges, this is like 100-200 years before this. Okay? During the time of Samson and during the time of David, the Philistines were powerful. And the Israelites would not go and besiege a Philistine town. But the Philistines would be coming inside Israel and they would be attacking Israel, killing the people, forcing them to pay heavy tributes and so on and so forth. What I want us to understand here is that the Philistines had a golden age. That golden age was during the time of Samson and the judges. And now, the Philistine nation is coming down. Can you see that? Couple of 100 years later, after the Samson and David, Solomon, Rehoboam, Jeroboam, Nadab now, the Philistines have come down. They have become much weaker. And now, the people of Israel has its own problems, but nevertheless, the people of Israel are besieging this Philistine town. Okay. Now this is a general tendency for all cultures and civilization. And the same tendency is there inside the church also. Now what is this tendency? You will have a civilization or a culture which blooms for some time. It flourishes and prospers and then it goes down. Okay. Now, although this is not our main topic, what I want to just mention for a moment is, what are some of the factors that cause a culture or a civilization to go down after flourishing for some time? Any guesses or any thoughts? What is it that causes a culture to go down? Say loudly. Okay, so what was the answer given that time? Sorry? Okay, pride makes people fall. Okay, anything further? But are you understanding the question? Even today in the world, you might have heard that population is a problem. Large population is a problem. But do you know there are many countries in the world where the population is decreasing? There are many countries in the world where it's all old people. There are so many old people and there are too few young people to take care of them. What is it that causes a culture to start going down? And this is happening with the Philistines here. There could be many reasons, okay? I just read recently in Japan, you know, these things that old people use, like old people also use diapers, okay? And babies also use diapers, napkins, okay? So in Japan recently, the sale of old people's diapers has overtaken the sale of babies' diapers. So there are more old people, you know, struggling with their old age than there are babies who are born. So that's happened for the first time in Japan last year or so. So there are many countries where the population is going down, where the civilization seems to be going down after having a great time in the past. Okay. Now there are many reasons for it, but in short the reason is departure from God, or if the civilization or the society, if it is away from God, then it has no option, but sooner or later it is going to fall down. Now we are reading from Kings. When we study Kings and Chronicles and the prophetic books, sometimes there God writes like that I have raised up this nation. I have raised up this nation. So sometimes God allows a nation to become powerful. Okay? But the general tendency is that after a nation becomes powerful, maybe God allowed them to become powerful, or there were some factors which made them powerful, but the tendency is that the nation will then go down. The nation goes down when it is far away from God, or when it adopts practices that are far away from God. Like if you look at the Japanese culture, it is highly materialistic. Okay? People are working, and they are working so hard and they are earning so much. They don't think about marriage, they don't think about having children and all that. You know? Another factor that causes, related factor only, that causes societies to decay is sexual immorality. Right? You know what is sexual immorality? It breaks families. And when families are broken, the society cannot sustain itself. Right? So, the Philistine culture was an immoral culture. And we will not be surprised if after a few generations what was happening is there were no stable families, you know, people were not bringing up their children properly, you know, there's a family, there is a man and his wife, but after some time the man and his wife, they leave each other, you know, so the children are left as orphans, or, you know, they don't have children, but before they're having children they leave and go and marry somebody else, then after that they marry somebody else. And all these kind of things are happening, the society crumbles down. Okay, it becomes weaker and weaker. What happened to the Philistines has happened to so many cultures in the world. Even the Roman Empire. In the New Testament we find that the Roman Empire was very strong. You know, 100 years after the time of the apostles, the Romans were desperately using hired soldiers. You know what are hired soldiers? Foreigners who are serving in our army. Why? Because we don't have enough sons to become soldiers. So in the time of like 200 AD, 250 AD, the Roman Empire was huge, but they were finding it difficult to sustain the huge empire. They were hiring soldiers from other countries, paying them salaries, and trying to make them serve in the army. Because their own population was not increasing, their population was decreasing. Okay? And why? Because the Roman culture was a very immoral culture. It was a culture where there were no stable families. So such a culture finds it difficult to sustain itself. And the same thing can happen in the church also. Okay? A church can flourish for some time, and after that it can go down. If we are not getting strength from God. Strength from God to sustain ourselves, to reproduce, to bring new people into the assembly, to nurture the new people and so on. If an assembly is not doing this, then the assembly will also decay. So this happens for cultures and civilization. Okay, so the Philistines are decaying here. And these Israelites, although they have problems of their own, they are going and attacking the Philistines. Okay? Who is the king at this moment? Nadab. And who is the new person who comes? Baasha. Okay? So Baasha becomes the next king of Israel. Okay. 1 Kings chapter 16 verse 6. 1 Kings 16 verse 6. Okay. So, so you're getting the sequence. After Jeroboam, there is Nadab. Then after Nadab, there is Baasha. And after Baasha, there is Elah.
Okay.
But Baasha and Elah don't come from Jeroboam's family. It's a separate dynasty. Okay, now what happens to Elah? chapter 16. 1 Kings chapter 16, verses 9 and 10. Yeah. So can you see, Elah also does not get to be king for a long time. Who conspires against him? Zimri, one of his army officers. Zimri comes and kills Elah. Okay. So, and what is Elah doing at this time? He is drinking. He is getting drunk. Okay. So these people were trying to enjoy themselves, but you can't really enjoy yourself because other people also want the power. Other people also want to enjoy. So, Zimri comes and Zimri kills Elah. Okay, then verse 15 to 19. 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 15 to 19. Okay, so here Zimri also doesn't get to have a nice time as a king. Okay, so when Zimri comes as a king, where are the Israelite army? Where is the Israelite army? They are at the Philistine country, Gibbethon. They are still continuing that siege. So they get the news that the king has been killed. Okay, now they are fighting. They are supposedly fighting for the king. And when they get to know that the king has been killed, they are like, okay, for what are we fighting here? Right? So what do these people do? They make Omri. So there is a capable, very capable fellow called Omri. He is one of the army officers. And they make him as king. Okay? And Zimri is in his palace. And what happens after that? Verse 17. Yeah, now they cannot continue the fight against the enemy, against the Philistines. They have their own problems. So now they come and they besiege Tirzah. Okay? So Zimri, So in case we were wondering earlier, no, what is the capital of the northern kingdom? The first capital of the northern kingdom was Tirsa. So Zimri was sitting at Tirsa, and then he saw that the Israelite army is coming from the Philistine country and now coming and besieging Tirsa. So what does Zimri do? What does Zimri do? Yes. So Omri and the others, they invaded Tirsa. They came inside the city. So Zimri thought, now these people are going to capture me. So instead of getting captured by his enemies as in they are Israelites only, but now they become his enemies. So instead of getting captured by his enemies, what does Zimri decide to do? He decides to set the palace on fire. So he committed suicide. That too by burning himself. You know, what a horrible way to die. Okay, but that's what happened to Zimri. Okay. Now, so who became king after this? Omri. Actually, there was a rival, but Omri became the king. Now, what I want us to notice is this. Okay. You can either do things God's way or your own way. Okay. Now, among all these people, who had rejected God's way? Earlier, Jeroboam. Jeroboam had already rejected God's way by making those golden calves at Bethel and Dan. Okay. None of these people tried to return to God, but they continued in the same way that Jeroboam continued. Okay. So now what I'm trying to say is this, either you do things God's way or your way. If you reject God's way and if you say that I can have more fun doing things my way, then please remember that other people also can say the same thing. So you think you can enjoy yourself better doing things your way. Okay. So like God says, don't exploit other people. But we think that no, I want power, I want to enjoy, and so I want to exploit other people. But then I should remember that other people also can exploit me. Are you understanding this? There are times when God asks us, this is how you have to live. And we don't want to live that way. Because we find more fun in some other things. But remember that if you can take a fun that is outside of God's will, and typically such a way of enjoyment will involve the wrong treatment of somebody else, then remember that other people are also out there looking for fun and they can also treat you badly. The best way is when everyone agrees that let us do things God's way. Then it's the best for everyone. But here we had Jeroboam and he said, you know, I will do things my way. I will not forget about God. What's important is my throne. At that moment, he never thought what is going to happen to his son. What happened to his son? His son got killed by Baasha. Right? He never thought about that. He only thought that I will secure my interests. But no man can completely guarantee his own interests. You think you can make your life on your own? You have only so much capability. Someone else will come and do something to you that you never thought about. So that's what happened with Jeroboam and with Elah. So Baasha came and killed him. What did Baasha think? I will kill this guy, I will get into the throne, and I will have a royal life. Well, Baasha didn't figure out what is going to happen to his son, Elah. Are you understanding this? So here now comes Omri. Okay, but remember this point. That if you think that you can have fun outside of God's will, well, other people can also do that. So you are not really going to have fun. You know, you might have a little fun, but afterwards, you know, you will be at the receiving end of somebody else. The better option would be to cast our life into God's hands and to live according to God's ways. Okay, Omri came to the throne. Then, let us read 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 29. Yeah, Omri had a son. What is Omri's son's name? Ahab. So Ahab became the king after Omri. Okay. Now Ahab is a king about which the Bible devotes good amount of space to. All these earlier people like Elah, Baasha, Zimri, Nadab and all that, they get very little space. But Ahab gets more space. Okay. Now, do you remember anything from the life of Ahab? Any incidents? Yeah, tell. Yeah, does everyone remember this incident? You say loudly. Yeah, there was a confrontation between the prophets of Baal and the prophets of Elijah, the prophet Elijah. So what did Elijah challenge the people? Decide who is God. Is Baal God or is Jehovah God? Okay. Yeah, so before that that is slightly getting ahead of the story. So let us read verse 30 to 33 also. 1 Kings 16, 30 to 33. Yeah, so starting from Jeroboam, all the kings were bad. Jeroboam was a bad king and so were his successors. But what does it say about Ahab? He was even worse. And he took the idolatry one step further. What was the one step further? Lovely? Married a woman who was an idolater. And what did they introduce in Israel? Baal worship. Before this, what was going on? The golden calf said Bethel and Dan. That was also idolatry. But Baal worship was taking it a step further. Okay. The golden calf, in some strange way, the golden calf had some connection in the minds of these people to the God of Israel. To Jehovah. It was a false thing. But Baal was even worse. Baal was a god of the Canaanites. And in the process of worshipping Baal, the people used to do a lot of bad things. Like Baal worship was associated with prostitution. You know what is prostitution? So in the temple, there would be priestesses, okay, who are temple prostitutes. And so there would be a lot of sexual immorality that is committed in the name of worshipping Baal. Then there would also be human sacrifices. Children and other people would be sacrificed, would be killed and offered to Baal as a sacrifice in order to make Baal happy so that he would send rain and so that he would send blessings on the land. So this kind of a very evil kind of idol worship, okay, Ahab introduced into Israel. And again, there is a woman here. What's her name? Jezebel. Where does she come from? Sidon. Okay, so Sidon was one of those nations, highly idolatrous, highly immoral. And Ahab had a wife from that place. And this lady, Jezebel, was very instrumental in bringing Baal worship into Israel. So she came with her culture, she came with her religion also, and she brought it into Israel. And the land was corrupted because of this Baal worship. Are you understanding the picture? Okay. So, there are some prominent incidents in the life of Ahab. So, one of them was when Elijah the prophet came and he challenged the people saying, Who you want to worship? Whether Baal is God or Jehovah is God. And what was the test that they decided? Fire would come on the sacrifice. So there Elijah was able to establish to the people that Jehovah only is the true God. So we read about this. We read about this in 1 Kings 18. Okay. In 1 Kings 17, there is Ahab's first meeting with Elijah. At that time, Elijah had told Ahab, you know what Elijah told Ahab when he met him the first time? It won't rain. There will be a famine for 3 years. So when Ahab was king, he had to face this 3 years famine. You know, again it is a reminder to us. See, if you go against God, the way is going to be difficult. When you go against God, you are making an enemy out of the most powerful person in the universe. You are going to run into trouble. So Ahab had to face those 3 years of famine, went through a lot of stress. At the end of those 3 years, there was this confrontation between the prophets of Baal and the prophets of Jehovah, that is Elijah. And then in 19, we have some later incident in the life of Elijah. Then in 20, in 1 Kings 20, we are not looking in detail, but we just want to understand the incident. What happens in 1 Kings chapter 20? There is a war with Syria. So, two times the Syrians attacked Israel. And who was more powerful? Who was more powerful, Syria or Israel? Syria was more powerful. But who won those battles? Israel won. And that is God's grace actually. God was gracious enough. God was trying to show to Ahab and the people of Israel, if you are not convinced that I am the true God, here is more proof. Here is proof. You people have a weaker army, but you are able to defeat the Syrians. And the first time they defeated the Syrians, on the mountains. The battle was fought on the mountaintops, the ranges between mountains and valleys. And the Syrians, what did the Syrians say after that? When they lost the battle on the mountaintops, they said, the God of Israel is the God of mountains. So if we fight on the plains, then we will win the battle. So next time they did their strategy in such a way that the battle took place in the plains. So what did God do? Yeah, we don't have time to read the whole passage because that's not our main topic. But if you read that passage, you find that God gives them victory again. Read verse 28. God is giving victory even on the plains. So then both the people of Israel and the people of Syria and Ahab the king, all of these people should understand that he is the true God. So the Syrians lost the battle on the plains. Okay? But I would say God was even merciful to the Syrians. How was God merciful to the Syrians? The Syrians lost the battle. So many of them must have died. Many of them must have got badly injured. You know, imagine someone has fired an arrow or a spear or someone has hit you with a sword. So you have got a very bad wound. In those days there were no painkillers. Probably there were no antiseptics also. So the Syrians would be in a bad state. But what I'm saying is that even in this harsh thing that has happened to them, even there is the mercy of God. What were the Syrians thinking? What were they saying earlier? That he is the God of the mountains. The Syrians were thinking that the God of Israel is the God of the mountains. That is why they did the battle on the plains. And what happened? They lost. And imagine all of them are going home with their wounds. You know, maybe it's very painful. maybe pus is coming, but what are they understanding here? They are understanding that the God of Israel is not just the God of the mountains. He is God of the mountains and the plains. He is the God of the whole earth. You know, I don't know whether there were any Syrian soldiers who thought to themselves that, you know, maybe this God that these Israelites worship, maybe he is the true God. Maybe there were a few soldiers who thought like that. And maybe these soldiers might have decided to worship Jehovah, the true God. If there were any of those such soldiers, we will meet them in heaven. Right? But here is God's mercy. It is better to have your body battered with all wounds and understand that the God of Israel is the true God and turn to him and have eternal life than to win the battle, you know, have lots of plunder and spoil, become rich, have a good life, worshipping the gods of Syria, and then go to hell. Are you understanding this? The same kind of thought we see even in the book of Exodus. God tells that God inflicts, what does God do to Egypt when he was bringing the people of Israel out? Plagues. How many plagues? 10 plagues. And what was the reason that God gave for giving these 10 plagues? Lovely. Yeah, say it loudly. That they may know that I am the true God, that I am the God in all the earth. I don't know whether there were any Egyptians who came to the conclusion that this God of Jehovah, the God of Moses, the God of Israel, he is the true God. Our water is turned into blood. There are frogs all over the place. Our crops are destroyed. Our cattle are gone. The people of Israel have taken our jewelry and they have gone away. And we are completely devastated. Okay? So imagine the life of an Egyptian family at that situation. They are in a very bad condition. But they have been worshipping idols all their lives. And maybe because of all that has happened to them, 3 days of darkness, they have been worshipping the sun. They consider the sun as a god. But Jehovah has blackened the sun for 3 days. And they start thinking, you know, maybe this Jehovah, he is the true God. And if so, it was worth it. It is better to lose all your water, lose all your crops, lose all your money. If that gets this into your head, that Jehovah is the true God and I should follow him. Are you understanding it? It is worth it. But think about it this way also, how privileged we are. You know, how privileged we are that we are born in Christian families. I think most of us are born in Christian families. So, you know, right from a small age, we have been taught about the true God. Are you understanding this? There is a privilege in this. There are other people. You know, recently I went to Delhi and I met a man there, and he is a Hindu, but he is interested in the gospel, and he works in a software company, and he said that I'm going through a lot of difficulty. Okay, there are a lot of financial problems, certain bad things have happened. There is a lot of difficulty. And I'm wondering what to do, and I'm wondering if any God can help me. So he told me the name of the God that he worships, but apparently he is not getting the help that he wants from that God. So he's like, you know, can Jesus help me? So what I told him is, look, yeah, of course Jesus can help you. What you can do is pray to the God of the Bible. Ask God for help. But also ask God for help in this way, that tell God that if you reveal yourself to me, if you show yourself to be the true God, then I will leave my family gods and I will follow you no matter what the cost. You know? So, as I was talking to him, I was telling him, I know you are very attached to your religion and you're not going to leave your religion easily. So maybe God has allowed this very great difficulty to come in your life. Maybe through this trial, you will understand that the God of the Bible is the true God. Okay. Now, this is how many Hindus, many Muslims, many people from other faiths, they come to Christ. Maybe some Egyptians and some Syrians also came to Christ in this way. But you and I are very privileged that from the beginning we have been told about the true God. Are you understanding this? Okay. So, here in chapter 20, we have these two wars. Two wars against the Syrians. Then in chapter 21, what do we have? In chapter 21, what happens to Ahab? Or what's the incident? Naboth's vineyard. There is a man called Naboth and he has a vineyard. So chapter 21 is a story of how Ahab wanted that vineyard and Naboth was not willing to give him, but Jezebel cooked up, Jezebel had a plan and got that vineyard by wrong means. So that is the story of chapter 21. Okay, chapter 22. What happens in chapter 22 in Ahab's life? Sorry? Yeah, Prophet Micaiah warns Ahab. What are these people thinking of doing? Or they have a visitor. They have a high profile visitor. Who is he? Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat from the southern kingdom of Judah. He comes there. And Ahab and Jehoshaphat are discussing. And what's their plan? Attack? Ramoth Gilead. So Ramoth Gilead is actually an Israelite town, but the Syrians have captured it. So Ahab is telling Jehoshaphat, look, our town is captured. Why don't we go and get it? So they are thinking of going and attacking the Syrians and recovering the lost territory of Israel. Okay? So do you know what happens in the battle? Ahab gets wounded and he is brought back in his chariot and he dies. So chapter 22. Chapter 22 is the end of Ahab's life. He goes for battle, he gets wounded, and he comes back, and he dies. Okay? So, in Ahab's life, there are these prominent incidences. We have the three of famine that Elijah warned him. Then we have Mount Carmel, the confrontation between Baal and Jehovah, and the people realize that Jehovah is a true God. Then we have the two wars with Syria, where Israel and Ahab, they were much weaker than the Syria, but still God enabled them to win the battle on the mountains and then on the plains. Then there was Naboth's vineyard. Ahab, through his wife Jezebel got Naboth killed. She murdered Naboth and took his vineyard. Okay. And then Ahab in chapter 22, Ahab goes for battle along with Jehoshaphat. He goes for battle against the Syrians and then he dies there in the battle. Okay. So that is the life of Ahab. It says, that, if you read that all these chapters, you find that, I think it is not in Kings, but it is in the prophetic books, Amos and all that. Ahab had ivory, storehouses of ivory. Ahab was a very rich man. You know, the kind of these historians and archaeologists, you know, the kind of things that they are looking for, Ahab had those things. So he had ivory, who knows from where he imported this ivory. It's not native to Israel. So ivory palaces, he built so many gardens and so many good things in Israel. In recent years, archaeologists have found all the things that Ahab built. So he was a very industrious man, very capable man, famous and powerful to some extent, but at the same time he was also a very wicked man. Okay? So today, his ivory palaces don't matter. But all the bad things he has done, they matter. And Ahab is paying and will pay the consequences for the bad things that he has done. Okay? So our time is up. So next time we will continue on this historical study. And I think in the next session, we will get into this question of how to determine these dates. Like, when did King Ahab live? And when did Jeroboam start ruling? And so on and so forth. So we will get into that question. Okay?